Hey everyone, what is a crack? It's Gareth McLean here and I am your host of the Pre-Construction Podcast. I want to start by apologizing for the delay in the latest episode. It's literally been February since we last published an episode of the Pre-Construction Podcast, and it's purely down to the demands of the market. The demand has never been higher for pre-construction and estimating talent. It's probably at its highest in the last 4 or 5 years. And it's great to see there's so many incredible companies out there right now, and they've got some incredible opportunities for people. So it's great to see. Long may it continue. But let's get on to today's guest. It's none other than Chris Samarco, who heads up the Tri-State Pre-Construction Division for DPR. I can only describe Chris as a pre-construction machine. This guy gets up at 3:30, 4 a.m., does his workout, gets physically ready, has his coffee, goes into the office and smashes it. And he really is a role model of how to achieve, how to be successful for any young pre-construction talent out there. We go into depth about Chris and all of that, including Paul Pizarro, who he puts down to his career in estimating. He was his mentor. We talk about Chris's drive and his determination to become the best. We also discuss how that nearly cost him his health. He lost 15-20 pounds on a particular project with Hunter Roberts. We discuss some of his kind of standout projects and standout clients, and how he is building a high-performing team now at DPR. I also really enjoyed his kind of breakdown on how DPR have gone from Excel to WinEst. But as always, before we hear from Chris, let's hear from our main sponsors, Beck Technology.
Hey everyone, I'm Stuart Carroll. I'm the president at Beck Technology. We are based in Dallas, Texas, and we are a pre-construction software company. We were founded in 1996, and we've really been focused on the world of pre-construction. We believe that pre-construction is where the biggest decisions that impact the outcome of a project occur. And we believe that through the use of technology, we can enable our users to make better, more informed pre-construction decisions, the net result of which is to make the world a better place. We're excited to announce our partnership with Niche. And one of the things that really excites me is bringing pre-construction professionals the opportunity to get certified in our latest product, Destiny Estimator. It's our belief that if we can help you understand how integrated pre-construction and pre-construction data lifecycle can benefit your business, it will ultimately improve the pre-construction services that you bring to your customers. And we'd like to announce that we're going to be releasing this at the end of Q1, and it's available to anybody that's a friend of Niche.
Chris Samarco, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thank you for having me today.
Good. No, I've been trying to get you on for a while, so thank you for making the time. I just want to quickly start, Chris. Give us an idea of where you're at in the country right now, who you're working for, and what you're doing.
So I'm a pre-construction manager for DPR Construction, located in Edison. We cover the tri-state area here, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. We have a quickly growing pre-construction staff, and I'm happy to be at the head of it.
Brilliant. Love it. And we'll get more into that later on. But let's take you all the way back to your early days. I see that you had a little bit of a passion for physical education. Was your first love physical education, or was construction? Did you always think construction would be your career of choice?
Well, I had started out planning on a career in physical education, and something just drew me to construction. I think after working in the business for a year or two, I decided I wanted to do something else with my life. And I think it might've been my mom who steered me towards engineering. And I started out working for PS&S as a civil engineer part-time while I was going to school. And I learned a bit of estimating from a guy who I credit to this day, who drew me towards estimating, and I never really looked back.
Good. Can we give him a shout out?
Yeah, I have to give an extra special shout out to my friend Paul Pizarro. I know he's still out there, probably as sharp as a whip. And he's the one who told me, he said, you went through that estimate like a buzzsaw. He said, if you want a job here, you have one when you get out of school. But if you want to try being an estimator, I think you'll be good at it.
Brilliant.
And I talked to him not that long ago, and he was very proud of what I've accomplished in my career.
Brilliant. What age were you then, Chris?
Oh, I was probably 23, 24 when I first met him.
Lovely. Yeah, like it. Lovely story. I mean, looking at you, you obviously keep yourself in good physical shape. Physical education, were you a sports guy throughout high school and college? Did you always kind of get drawn to that? And was it the fact that estimating is so competitive? Was it the competitive streak that you thought, you know what, this could be a good happy medium?
So I think my physical fitness started at a young age. I was overweight as a kid, and I kind of got tired of, you know, people weren't so nice when you're overweight at a young age, and I decided to change that. And I did it in a very short order, and I've stuck with it since. As for the sports background, we played a lot of sports in my young days, but mainly street sports, stickball, baseball, football, anything we could play, you know, on the side streets. I played in some of the little league up until probably about high school, mainly baseball. And then the weightlifting really took off around that time, running, weightlifting. And it's a key part of my success now because everybody knows that I'm up at 3:30, 4 in the morning. I work out every day. I drink my coffee while I'm working out, and I get myself set up for the day, and I'm usually on my computer while I'm stretching out for my workout, and then as soon as I'm done. So it really sets my day up, and I think sometimes estimating is a bit like a marathon. So I think physical fitness is very important, especially when you have those bids or those long days. You need the endurance, especially absolutely, as the years pass.
Absolutely, Chris. I couldn't agree more. It's so important. No matter what industry you're in, it's so important to be physically and mentally just on the ball for high performance. So we'll go into that a little bit more as well. But again, I think sports and keeping yourself in shape, whether it be just, as you say, challenging yourself, how much you can lift or how far you can run. I think the whole competitive side of estimating, I deal with a lot of young people, and if they've got a sports background throughout high school, throughout college, I find they get drawn towards estimating, and it's purely because of the competitive side of it. Was that the case with you? I mean, obviously your mentor at the time advised you to go through estimating, but were you like every other child, wanted to get into project management, and you just found that the challenge of competition in estimating was too much?
I think when I started estimating, I was fascinated by the numbers aspect and doing takeoffs. And then as I advanced my career, then it became more competitive. It became, now I want to be the best at what I do. I want to be better, faster, more accurate, and have more projects under my belt and make sure I was in the thick of all the major projects that came through all the great companies I worked with over the years.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And I totally agree with you. You've worked with some incredible companies early on. Unfortunately, we haven't got time to go through them all. So we're going to jump to Hunter Roberts, August 2006 to August 2011. Hunter Roberts, we've talked about this before offline, but give us an idea of stepping into a position at Hunter Roberts. What was the real challenge that you thought, you know what, this is a company for me? Was it the size of projects, the size of companies, the dollar value, the complexity, the method at which they built projects? Give me an idea of stepping in there at Hunter Roberts and what the challenges were.
So at the time, it was a perfect move for me. There was very little risk early in my career. It was a startup company. It was a great place. Still think it's a great place. I had gone from a smaller GC to place where I was doing high rises in the city. So that was an extreme jump, and it was a stretch at the time. So Hunter Roberts was a chance to come back down to earth, advance my career a little bit, and learn the trade on some big projects. And I got to spend time with them in New York. And, you know, it came down to me in the end wanting to come back to New Jersey, but it was a great place. And I still have a lot of good friends that are either there or that I keep in touch with. And I credit that place for getting me to where I am today, because I learned Corn Shell. I learned some major projects in the tri-state area and got to be a part of things that not many people see.
So, brilliant. Give us a few of the highlights.
I get to work on such things as Red Bull Stadium. I saw some high-rise projects in New York. We saw things in or near the World Trade Center. Some of the big lab projects in Long Island. So we're talking about $300-500 million projects, maybe more, in various places, New York, New Jersey, maybe even into Connecticut at some point. We did a few things. So
brilliant.
Got to see a lot of great stuff.
Brilliant. And Chris, going from, it's interesting, you'll get a wide variety of people listening to that. People that are in $2 to $10 million projects, $10 to $20, $30 million projects. What is the difference between going from a $40 million project, whether it's a grade A office building, to either a high rise or a large lab or a sports stadium? What are the main differences?
I think some of them are night and day. Like if you, let's say you miss caulking of a door frame on a high rise times 500 apartments, it adds up really quick. Logistics is always a challenge depending on where you are with the high rises. The stadium was an entirely different thing and something I may never see again. And it was, an adjustment for everybody who worked on it. Different set of complexities. And I think everybody who worked on the stadium learned a lot. And then I've done the labs and the hospitals, which are a whole other set of logistical problems, mostly related to the MEP. And sometimes you have to fit things in a building where it just doesn't want to fit. So you have to come up with creative solutions.
Absolutely. Even Chris, at a young age then, because I would imagine you weren't too old then, you were getting a lot of diversity. I mean, Hunter Roberts as a startup, was it like the first, were you involved in the first lab that they did, the first major stadium, the first high rise?
I believe they were there for a year before I came on board. So there were a lot of things that were in motion when I got there. And then I got to see things from start to finish. Like we mentioned, the stadium was one of the major ones. And I always go back to that because it's such a special project.
It's incredible. And I have to say, I take my hat off. I'm a big soccer man. I was kind of privileged enough to play soccer for 12 years professionally in Europe before starting this career. And I have to say, it's one of the finest stadiums that I've ever been in. And I've been in stadiums in Australasia, Europe, South America, Ireland, England. It's perfectly proportioned to the amount of fans. So the facilities, whether that's toilets, whether that's retail, whether that's food, whether that's where you're positioned in the stadium, there's a great view from everywhere. I mean, the new Camp I'll take in Barcelona, I mean, it's like a big coliseum. It's like a concrete kind of bowl. But the Red Bulls has got real, it's got a real homely feel to it, and a real, when you're there, you hear and feel every movement of the football and the players and the fans. So, and I know that was there a lot of research going into that, to getting it that well built?
I think operations had their hands full at the time, and I think they did the research they needed to do and contacted the proper people to give them the insight on how to make that project work. And some of them are still there today, very sharp people that I keep in touch with to this day.
You're selling yourself short, Chris. You're am I right in saying you led the pre-con on this?
I was involved leading the GMP. Right. And that's the short answer. That was a few months of very intense estimating and GMP. We had a great team to support the effort, but that was my role at the time. And it was great for my career.
Brilliant. Yeah, it really took off. How stressful was it working with a European client building your first stadium in New Jersey, where the cost of materials, the cost of labor, everything is through the roof? I mean, surely there was some managing of expectations when it comes to the client on that.
They were a good client. They were good people. They had a different way of doing things overseas with unit prices and labor rates that was a little bit different than what's done typically in this region. But I think in the end, we reached a happy medium. That was most of that was after I had filtered out once we got past the GMP stage. But I think in the end, they were happy with the final product, and it was a good relationship. It was just a learning curve on both ends as to the expectations.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say, the product's incredible. So hats off to yourself and the client. And what are the big learning curves? I mean, that was your first big project. I mean, what was the total value of it?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure what the final value was, but I'm not sure if it's something that should be discussed. Oh, it's probably under NDA, so.
Yeah, makes sense.
Out of respect for them, I'll have to pass on that one.
Absolutely, yeah. So listen, we're talking hundreds of millions. It's a huge project. So young in your career. What are the big takeaways from it? What did you learn from it? We always say that you got to take something from every project. I mean, you generally don't learn from the project that go 100% smoothly. You tend to learn from the real challenging projects. What were the things that you took away that you would now give advice to maybe someone 2-3 years in the industry just taking on a big maybe a higher education stadium?
Well, there's a few things on both ends. So as the building, I think the precast and the steel was the big driver for that project. So anybody who's going to get involved in the type of project, I would do your research on that end and how everything else around it's affected. From a pre-construction standpoint, for me, it was an opportunity to see how to lead a large team of estimators and some operations people and keep things on course, procurement schedule, project schedule, and then, complexities with the budget and how it all ties together. That was probably the first big major project for me in my career. So there was a lot to learn on both sides.
Brilliant. And how do you go picking and choosing your team on that? Was it a case of the team was already there, you just had to handpick the people that you wanted on that team? Or was it a case of going out externally and recruiting the specific, maybe you went and got a good concrete estimator, maybe a good steel estimator? How did you go about building a high-performing team?
At the time, we used what we had in-house at the time. We used our pre-construction team. At the time, I was early in my career, just an estimator. So I was one of a handful of people, and that was the driver to get my career to the next level. So we used what we had in combination with some of the people who were going to build the job. And a lot of people who are on that project went on to bigger and better things in their career and leadership roles. So it was great in many respects.
Brilliant. And that's the key. It's amazing when you're involved in a high performing team like that. Sometimes you don't realize how good everyone is and how lucky you are until you move on or you get into another team. I always said it whenever I went through. I mean, I played 12 seasons with the soccer or the football, as we call it in Europe, and you don't realize how good you have it until you land in a team or in a club that isn't as well set up or hasn't got a high performing team. It's difficult, and I suppose it's just one of those things. You're in the right seat at the right time with the right project with the right team. It goes so much better. Talk to me about the challenges yourself that you faced within that project. We've talked about them on air. What advice would you give other people that's maybe, I mean, I talk about it quite often now on LinkedIn about burnout. I mean, as estimators, we've gone from bidding 4 or 5 jobs a month to 4 or 5 jobs a week. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on a lot of people out there. Is there any lessons that you learned from such a high octane estimating department?
I did. I took that one to heart to the point where I lost something like 15 or 20 pounds in short order that summer. I remember people in the trailer laughing at me because between meals, I was eating yogurts and I had bags of chocolate and peanut butter chips. And I was just having four or five of those a day in addition to the five meals I had. And I still ended up losing almost 20 pounds. So I probably wasn't in the best of health at that time. And I really took it to heart. Now that I look back, you're a little more seasoned in your career. You handle things differently. At the time, it was kind of make it or break it for me in a lot of respects. It was senior estimator or bust. And that was the path to get there. That was what was laid out for me. So when you have that in front of you, it's, you know, for me, it was, there was no failure.
Yeah. And it's amazing what we can do. And as you say, you had the path, you had the growth plan, you wanted to succeed. And again, that comes back to your background, your physical education, your determination. And what would you have done differently had you realized what you realize now?
I'm not sure there's anything on the pre-construction front that I would have did differently. It just, if I could have stayed a little bit calmer and not so hard on myself, but you just don't know what lies ahead. So, you know, even to this day, I'm still tough on myself with my career and you never know what comes next. But I mean, for me, I've been fortunate. It's always been upward and onward, no matter what the obstacle.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love it. Great, great advice. If you're determined, you'll always get there. I mean, I talk a lot on the podcast and on my LinkedIn profile about grit and determination. I think it's the single biggest thing. I mean, I look for it here when I'm hiring for my own firm. Grit and determination. You always get an instance or a scenario within someone's career that they can point to, and they always should have somewhere to point to and said, I showed serious grit, serious determination to achieve that goal. And I did whatever it took. So fair play. So talk to us now, Chris, about pre-construction technology as a whole. What are you, even at Hunter Roberts during that project, what were you using? What were you guys using when it came to BIM VDC, pre-construction estimating platform, on-screen takeoff? What was it like back there and how are you evaluating the progression?
Well, for pre-construction, we were using, and to this day, I still use on-screen takeoff. Everything was done in Excel. There were no estimating programs that were really in favor at that time. Now, BIM, I honestly can't comment on that because I don't remember back what the technology was. I know there was some digital modeling that was probably a bit primitive. We're going back a number of years.
Yeah.
On pre-construction, though, it was pretty simple. It was on-screen takeoff in Microsoft Excel.
Good, good. And it's amazing how effective it would have been. And what about now, Chris? What's your thoughts on pre-construction technology? It's been talked a lot about different estimating softwares out there. What's your vision of the future of pre-construction and estimating? How can we use technology to help us build bigger, better, safer buildings?
Well, I think here at DPR, I think we are on top of technology like nobody I've ever seen. If there is a technology out there, we have either invented it or using it or are looking into it. So we are cutting edge on so many fronts with the technology. Like, I never used an estimating software. WinEst is a program that I had heard about, but using it is, at first, it's an adjustment because you're so bent on using Excel and all the things you've done over the years, but you can do all of that and then some with a program like WinEst because you can split an estimate up as many ways as you want. And maybe it takes an hour, whereas it could have taken you anywhere from a day to 2 days to do it in Excel with all the various checks between sheets. Whereas you can do it in a software program. And again, it could be an hour, it could be 5 minutes. It's a great tool.
Brilliant.
That's just the one that comes to mind that I use on a regular basis.
Brilliant. And it's always a learning curve. I mean, I speak with general contractors, big, large, small, and they all say that pre-construction technology estimating software is the next step for them. What was the biggest challenges for you going from Excel to WinEst? Was there much of a learning curve or was it quite steep?
Not much of a learning curve. It was me just jumping in and testing it. And then we have all these great tutorials online. We have many resources here at DPR for people who are just starting, whether it be you know, calling up somebody who's versed in it. I have people here who taught me a lot of things, and then just looking at some of the online tutorials that we have internally. Yeah. It was a very easy transition on that front.
Brilliant. Love it. So what's the future for Chris now, Samarco? What's holding at DPR? What projects have you got working on? What are you excited about most when it comes to pre-construction and estimating?
So we are growing at leaps and bounds here in this region. In the last year that I've been here, our growth has been phenomenal. Now, a lot of the projects have NDAs attached with them. I think a lot of the subcontracting community knows where we're working, but it's life sciences, advanced tech, and healthcare is the future. And I think a lot of these projects that are under NDA will be common knowledge sooner than later. And as I mentioned, a lot of the people on the street, you know, have knowledge of these things for what's coming up, or either they're working for us now. You know, for me personally, it's to continue to grow our pre-con team, which has gone from me and two or three others up to maybe 10 or 11 of us at this point, and continuing to grow in the three states with, I'm going to say more of a full-time presence in each of them in the future.
Good. Good. Brilliant. Like everyone else out there, Chris, it's a busy time trying to get the right people. And what would you say, what would you look for in a guy or a gal, 2-3 years experience? What do you like to see in candidates?
I like to see somebody with a little sense of urgency to their voice. Like when I speak with somebody who's a little nervous and has that sense of urgency, you know they're going to have the drive to do the job. And that's a big part of it. If you have the drive, the will to work, the urgency, the passion, then the rest is easy.
Absolutely. I had a funny conversation with a client recently. I said to him, I would love to hire like 5 or 6 Olympians. To think that people train for 4 years nonstop to perform in a 4 or 5 minute window where it could all go right and all go wrong. It's amazing. It's amazing dedication. And it just shows you that there are people out there. The idea of doing small little things, taking small little steps for a bigger, bigger, better goal, it's incredible. Would you hire a couple of Olympians?
I think we have a few here. I mean, our pre-con team is amazing, and it's people that I picked. You know, we had one person who was here who was phenomenal. She's a rock star, and then I built it up with people that I knew from my past that I either trained or I knew family members and other people that they knew. And it's like a rock star pre-con team here. It's like a tornado. I push the button on something and say go, and it's everybody just goes. There's no questions asked. And it's everybody has that competitive spirit and everybody works together. It's the most cohesive unit in a very short period of time that I've ever worked with.
Brilliant. Well, I have to say that's probably credit to yourself, Chris. There's a whole lot of many Chris's running about by the sounds of things.
Yeah, we've definitely, I'd say we have 2 or 3 future pre-con managers here who are earlier in their career, and I see a little bit of myself in them, and I try to mentor them and coach them and teach them from what I learned, and I try to keep a little, we like work-life balance, and I don't want people to get stressed out and harm themselves like maybe I did in the past, and I try to pass on whatever knowledge that I have, which I learned from some very sharp people. You know, there's other people out there who I'd have to credit who were great teachers to me over the years, and pass that on. Some of that's going to be a lost art as time goes forward. And I learned kind of from the pen and paper, digitizer era, fax machines and all that fun stuff. So I learned a bit of the old school, but I also trained in the new school.
Brilliant. I love it, because that's important, Chris, because as you say, knowledge retention is going to be huge. A lot of those mentors that would have trained you and developed you are slowly but surely kind of leaving the industry and retiring. And it's really important that we download as much information for those brains as possible. But listen, thank you very much. It sounds as if everything's going really well, Chris. And we really appreciate you coming on the Pre-Construction Podcast. For those people, if anybody want to reach out and get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
So you could reach me. I could give my DPR email. That's probably the quickest way because I'm in front of it pretty much 24/7. And it's chris.sammarco@dpr.com. And you know, LinkedIn as well. People have messaged me on LinkedIn as you know, we had chatted through LinkedIn. But email is the immediate because if I'm not on a call or on multiple phone calls, sometimes multiple phones ringing, you can always get me through email.
Brilliant. I love it. Well, listen, thank you very much. I know it's a busy time in the pre-con industry right now with the amount of bids that are out there. So we really appreciate you coming on and thank you very much.
For having me today. It's a pleasure.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. There's no doubt about it that Chris DeMarco is a passionate, driven character, both professionally and personally. And his dedication to pre-construction, his dedication to his own physical fitness, they really do complement each other really well. And it's no coincidence that if you're physically and mentally in tune, that you can perform better at work. There is no doubt in my mind that Chris will become a real leader within the pre-construction space in the coming years. He gives some great advice and lessons. And so please share this with any of your peers, any of your staff, any of your friends that might enjoy it. Thanks again for listening. Stay tuned for more pre-construction success stories.